everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. We're going to be covering some of the moves in the commodities. Still very strong commodities prices out there. Look at some of the ETFs for the underlying commodity stocks. And in the back half of the show, talk more energy sector news, even though we still have oil, natural gas very much stuck in ranges. Just as a reminder, please go back through our website, kereport.com. Podcast, search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all of our daily editorials and all the company updates we are recording and posting throughout the week. To kick off this show, we're bringing on Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. He writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail individual side, check out In the No Trader, that website. I will post a link in the show notes to that website. Rick has three products, the 7-Eleven Ultra. That's where he's constructing a portfolio like a hedge fund would build. He also writes the weekly report, Tactical Trader, and a daily report called the Daily Tip Sheet. Rick, as I said, I want to focus a bit more on some of the commodities moves. Let's start off with one of the more widely followed commodities, that being gold. Gold is right around that $2,750 level. It's a strong gold price, and that's even in the face of the higher dollar this month, higher interest rates. Take us through your outlook for the gold market, please, Rick.
So I have trimmed some gold up here at about $2,700 that I've had for years. I've had some long-term targets up here on monthly charts, quarterly charts, and enough so that to me, I don't have to sell the top. To me, it makes sense taking some off. The dollar has strengthened too from 100 to 104 in the last months. And obviously, gold still managed to make all-time highs. But if the dollar keeps going, you got to think sooner or later it's going to take its toll on gold. And I'm not looking for a major decline in gold, but I do think that it is quite loved now. And even if I look at a particular pattern of price bars on a super long-term chart, so I'm going to pull up, let's say, a COMEX quarterly gold chart and go back to when it first started trading in the early 1970s. There's a pattern by which if you have 9 quarters in a row that the closing price on the last day of the quarter is above the closing price from 4 quarters prior, and you do that 9 times in a row, and this is part of Tom DeMark's sequential model, you actually have had the 2 times this has shown up in the entire trading history of gold, both were tops for years. Now, we are currently in the 8th of 9th bars. This is October. So this quarter runs through December, which means we don't get the 9th bar until the first quarter next year. Nonetheless, being that 2716 was a target that's been in place since December of 2015, it's 10 years later, back on that low when gold got down to, I don't know, what was it, $1,000 somewhere around there. One of these models predicted gold would get to 2716. The fact that we've gotten there this quarter, the fact that we're on the 8th of 9th bars, it's enough for me to trim. Even if you take a basic RSI chart, you know, you're in overbought territory, even on a quarterly basis. This would be the third highest reading ever, which of course makes sense considering you're on all-time highs. But I've told my clients I've, you know, taken some profits in gold. And look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope gold goes to $3,000 because I still have a decent position. But I have definitely trimmed, and I am, how shall I say, not in any way, shape, or form angry at myself that, you know, gold's near $2,750 and I sold $50 ago. Considering where I put these on, it's fine. So in the scheme of things, I think it makes sense to trim some. I am not buying gold at $2,750. I am selling gold up here.
Well, Rick, let's also pivot over to the gold stocks, because it's a little different chart, a little different setup. Some of them, some people believe, still have some catching up to do to where the gold price even is. Although, as we record this today on Thursday, the 24th, everybody was expecting margin expansion, and Newmont has kind of
got crushed
today, down over 14%. Not a good thing for the GDX, not a good thing for the biggest gold miner. So what do you make of the gold miners with these gold prices?
Well, look, the catch-up trade is something that people have been talking about for a long, long time, and yet it hasn't really happened. So if I just, as we're talking, I'm going to pull up a chart of GDX divided by GLD. So this is basically sideways for a couple of years in a fairly tight trading range, maybe 15, 20%, you know, from top to bottom over the last few years. And it's kind of in the middle. So I understand the thought process, and you see a lot of talking heads on business television networks talking about the catch-up trade. So far, it's been fairly dead money. It has worked if you put it on in the first quarter of this year. We're higher than that. But if you put it on a year ago, you're barely up. If you put it on 2 years ago, you're slightly down. So, you know, this has done nothing over time. It's really a question of, will this ultimately play catch up, considering the stocks seem to be quite undervalued? If you put the trade on, I think you have to be prepared to potentially wait years, and maybe it would come faster than that. But there's nothing that I'm looking at that is blaringly saying you've got to have that trade on from right here, right now. Generally, over the course of the year, it moves up and down enough so that, being that a week or two ago was probably the peak for this year, I'd say you probably could hold off. And if the ratio, only if the ratio gets above 0.17 and stays above there, but then I say it has a better chance to move higher. But right now that ratio is about 0.1666 or so, meaning the price of the GDX is 16.66% to the price of GLD. And that's how you properly trade pair trades, is by making a ratio of them. Your return is based upon the movement in the ratio. And for those who have never put on a pair trade, I will remind you, as I do all my retail-oriented clients every time I put on a pair trade, is that you decide how much money you want to go long, whatever is going to be the numerator, whichever stock of, you know, whichever of the two names you're going to go long. You pick a certain amount of dollar amount. Let's just pick a number. You buy $5,000 worth of, in this case, GDX. You would then sell $5,000 worth of GLD. You do not do the same amount of shares. You do the same amount of notional dollar amount. And that way you have an equal pair trade that you've bought and sold the same amount. And your return is simply the difference over time of what that ratio is that you create by A divided by B.
Interesting. Rick, I want you to put on your trader's hat from back in the day when you were a commodities trader to discuss this environment that we have here where, look, usually these gold stocks provide that leverage to the gold price, and that's why investors go into the gold stocks. Yes, Newmont's earnings disappointed the market. That being said, the stock was already up over 40% just in that quarter. So the market was pricing in some solid earnings, which clearly they disappointed the market. But with all these other products out here, these leveraged ETFs to the underlying gold price, do you think traders have a different strategy now when they're trading some of these commodities, that they're simply not going down into the underlying equities?
I think it's much easier for people to think in terms of gold than gold stocks. Because when you do gold stocks, you've got to look more into the company in itself. There's lots of names out there to choose from. Which one do you choose? Did you pick the right one? What happens if you were long Newmont? You know, that was the wrong one. I think because the price of gold is always shown, and since GLD has been trading for years now and is a frequently mentioned ETF, and certainly the most liquid of the gold ones, I think more people likely, if they're bullish gold, have an easy way to trade that through GLD or a similar type of, you know, you want a fairly liquid ETF. as compared to picking the gold stocks. Now, to also comment on something you've said, where you said that gold stocks, you know, typically do better than the bullion, in 10 years, they have not at all. GDX is completely sideways for 10 years versus GLD. And from 2011 to 2015, they got crushed versus GLD. So there is no historical precedent that gold stocks do better than gold. If anything, it's the other way around. Bullion does better than gold stocks. Now, maybe with a long-term double bottom in place of that ratio, which you have from 2015 and now 2024, at a very similar ratio price, you could take the chance to buy GDX versus GLD.
All right, Rick. Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't pivot over to silver, gold's scrappy little brother, part precious, part industrial. It's had a hard time breaking above resistance at 3250. Finally, that happened earlier in the week. We saw it bounce from 33 to 34 to 35. It's reversed down now some, but still holding above 33. That metal gets more animal spirits going in both the gold and the silver stock. So I'm curious your read on silver, where it is here and now.
Okay, so I've owned, and it's kind of been unfortunate, I've owned a position in silver for probably close to 15 years. And a few times I had a chance to make about maybe a max of 10% on it. Because I'm long SLV, if I recall, in the 24 handle. And right now, SLV, which is kind of comparable to GLD, but it's for silver, SLV is trading about 30 and a half or so. So I'm finally making some money on it. I've trimmed some gold stocks also. I haven't trimmed my silver yet, partly because having traded a short amount of time, but in my years on the floor of the commodities exchange, I did spend some time in COMEX trading both gold and silver. It is, let's put it this way, it has a higher beta than gold. And when it moves, it can really move. It's not nearly as dense a market as gold is, and it tends to have more niche players in it. So I'm hoping that, you know, as one particular target I can look at for SLV, it's about 33 and a quarter, 33 and a half. That's based on the 2022 low and the projection of how high it would go from there. Look, we know that silver all-time high in the metal was $50. And that was in 1980 when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the market. In 2011, I think it got to, what, $40-ish, something like that, and then fell again all the way down to near 10. It's the thing with silver is there's always ample supply. As the demand, the industrial demand pulled back over time when technology came about such that we could take digital pictures. We didn't need film in our cameras, and silver was a major component to the in the production of film. So, you know, there was a huge pullback in need industrially for silver. It's not only gold's poor man's younger brother, kid brother, but think about this. If the price of silver right now is $34, and the all-time high is $50, you're, what is that, 34% off the all-time high, whereas gold has made numerous all-time highs and has gotten way above that 1980 price of, what was it, $850 back in 1980? I mean, you're talking about something that is just a minor game compared to what gold has been. And it was a lot easier for a lot of people to afford to play and own silver because it was so much cheaper. But your return in silver since, I don't pick a time, here, since 2011, silver actually got to $50 or close to it, you know, for the second time. So 1980 and 2011, long-term double top near $50. So at $34, you're $17 down, right? That's your 34% down if you had bought silver in 2011. If you bought gold in 2011, You paid at its peak price $1,900. It's now $2,750-ish, right? So let's pull out $2,750 divided by 1,900. You're up 44% versus being down 34% owning silver, which is the right one to own. Obviously, gold has been, and it's hard to make the case that, again, silver might have some type of catch-up trade, but it's people want gold. They don't want silver.
Oh, that's what the market has sure been telling us, hasn't it? Let's move on to another commodity here, copper. Copper has been actually quite volatile this year. It was under $4. It was the whole way down to about $3.60 earlier this year, and then ran the whole way up to over $5, and then dropped below $4, and now has rebounded to, let's just broadly say, somewhere in the $4.30 range. Rick, what's going on with copper here? It's not usually this volatile, and what direction is it heading in your eyes?
So I have specifically commented to my clients that I want nothing to do with copper, and I'll tell you why. It moves so much on the basis of what people think China's needs are, right? And then recently we had the bounce, copper bounced from $4, got to, I don't know, about $4.65, something like that, pulled back to the $4.40-ish or so that it is now. The problem is China doesn't need any copper right now. China has cities built, many of them, without a single person living in these cities. Their construction needs for copper are done for years and years. So I don't believe the whole idea that when China rallied, when did it come? I don't know, almost a month ago, something like that, when China just flew on Bank of China easing, you know, copper all of a sudden got a big rally. But it's pulled back also because there really isn't the demand for it. And I just think there are other metals to trade if you want to trade metals. Copper is not the one. I have mixing as much as, you know, you're starting to get higher highs and higher lows. I also have upside exhaustion signals in place from 5-6 weeks ago, 1 week before that top was made at $5. It's just something that I think you have no edge in trading. So unless you're in the copper industry and you have some, and when I say inside, I don't mean illegal inside. If you have some edge because you're in the industry and you understand what's going on there, that you can determine if you should be long or short, great. Otherwise, I wouldn't touch it.
Well, Rick, copper sometimes gets that energy metal vibe because of the AI data centers or the crypto mining or the EV and the renewables. If we need more solar and wind, we're going to need more copper. But another metal that falls in that same energy metals camp is uranium. It's had a bit of a bounce, and the uranium miners through the ETF URNM had a nice rip higher after a pretty bad sell-off the last couple months before that. Any thoughts on uranium or the uranium equities?
I give it a barely minor bullish tone. So if you go back since the COVID low in 2020, you have higher highs and higher lows. But I've also got some exhaustion signals in place from late first quarter, early second quarter this year, which actually coincided with the peak price for, I'm looking at the URA ETF, which is, you know, global X uranium ETF. And so I could make the case that it's trading range. And if you buy strength or sell weakness, it's the wrong thing to do. You actually want to buy weakness and sell strength until that range changes. Right now, over the last few months, again, in the URA ETF, your lows are around 23, your highs are around 33, 34, and play the range until it decidedly breaks out from there.
Rick, what are some of your favorite commodities then? It sounds like even though you're selling gold, it still could go higher after somewhat of a correction. Do you have a favorite commodity that you see upside in?
I'm going to answer that question by saying I don't right now. I watch the big commodities consistent, like daily, but it's been a while since I got into the softs or the grains the way I was a year or two ago, where I was actively trading them through a fund, and that fund changed, you know, pulled back from doing what they were doing. So I don't do that for them anymore. So I watch gold, silver pretty religiously. I watch crude oil and natural gas pretty religiously. Beyond that, well, okay, let's put copper in there too, but I don't spend a lot of time looking at the softs. the grains, the meats. So the answer is I don't have a favorite commodity right now because of the major ones I look at. Oil is stuck between occasionally some political, generally Middle East or OPEC-related rally versus ample supplies. So it's trading range and doing nothing. Natural gas spiked up to almost $3 and then fell down to, I don't know, 2.25. It's doing nothing. At least it finally bounced off of its lows under $2. Gold, I've commented on. Silver, I've commented on. So the answer is I don't really have a favorite commodity right now.
Well, how about this, Rick? In the energy space, the traditional oil versus nat gas, which one do you like more if you had to pick one?
It's funny. I actually have a position on in that of I'm long USO versus short UNG. So I have picked oil over nat gas, mostly because of potential flare-ups from the Mideast, giving the potential for oil to always, you know, get that pop. But that trade I put on earlier in October, I'm up a little bit on it, but nothing special. And I'm not sure I'm even going to stick with it much longer. In fact, I'll tell you another thing. I'm in this game over 40 years. I am closing down most of my trading positions by November 4th. So going into Election Day, I don't want to have much on. I'll have certain pair trades on that are working, but outright trades, I have no idea how people are going to react to this election. We do have a little history with Trump running. So if you think back to November of 2015, when he ran against Hillary Clinton, election night when she was ahead, the Dow was down 1,000 points. But as the night went on, it started turning because Trump started edging her out. And by the close of business, the day after Election Day, is whatever that Wednesday was, the market actually closed higher than where it had closed on Tuesday. So I could see something, you know, similar to that happening now. If Harris is ahead, I could see them selling off stocks. If Trump's ahead, I could see them rallying stocks. And as that, you know, election night goes on, depending upon how those numbers are swinging, I expect to see big swings. And I don't really want to have a lot to do with that because now you're dealing, you know, you can do all the research you want, but when you're a trader and you're living somewhat in the shorter term realm of, you know, days to weeks to a month or two of trying to figure out the next move, that makes sense to put on in a particular stock, ETF, commodity, whatever it is you're trading. You get events like this where we just don't know how the market's going to react other than we could say historically, okay, Democrats, you know, are not as good for the market, or at least initially thought to be as good for the market as a Republican could be. So maybe if Harris, you know, is edging forward to the S&P's sell off 50-100 points, I don't know. But if, you know, for trading positions, I don't think I want to get involved in that. So I will close down on most things and come into that day with only some pair trades on, and only if those pair trades are up enough that I feel like there's a cushion.
Ah, very interesting, Rick. I'm going to be following up with you after the election, so we'll see what the new positions are that you put in. Again, Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Click that link for the In the Know Trader website to check out Rick's retail products for all of you traders out there listening to the show. Rick, it's always great having you on this weekend show. Thank you very much for your time this weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks for having me, guys. Look forward to our next time.